Song Talk Radio with Michael, Neil, Phil, and the gang.
Oh, welcome to Song Talk Radio, the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. Makes sense, don't it? We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. We guarantee it. I'm your host, Mike Proudfoot, and with me are the members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team, my co-hosts, Phil Emery. Hello, Phil. How are you?
I am very good. My stuff came in, and so we're unpacking, and life is looking, starting to look normal.
Nice. Excellent. Phil is now setting up our East Coast Song Talk Radio headquarters, and he's still in the process of unpacking, which is why there's a little bit of acoustic echoey sound to him. A bit of an empty room. It's called reverb. It's called unintentional reverb. Someday he'll control his reverb. And our other member of the Song Talk Radio Action Team here in Toronto, the world headquarters of Song Talk Radio, is Neil Modi. Hello, Neil. How are you?
Michael, in response to your introduction, yes, it does make sense, and only fractions of sense if you're on Spotify.
Well, that's true. Most streaming, only fractions of sense.
I don't want to single out Spotify, but yeah.
No, because they all rip you off.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, and some of them give a platform to racists and white supremacists. Yeah. Other platforms don't. You choose which ones you want to subscribe to, please subscribe to Song Talk Radio at wherever you get your favorite podcast. Also, during this show, please feel free, audience members, to send your comments and questions to @SongTalkRadio on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or email us at feedback@songtalk.ca, and we will share them with you. And visit us at songtalk.ca to find out who you might be a guest on the show. Now, speaking of people sharing things, Phil, I think we've gotten some, or at least, well, you can share one of our emails, can't you?
We've got a couple of emails. Of course, one of the things we have on the website is we have a free lyric sheet that you can download and that you can fill out. It has styles, I think, for, verse and chorus and that type of thing. And so we got an email from Jeffrey M. From Arlington, Washington in the US of A. It says, thank you for your free lyric sheet. I'm putting together an album and using your lyric sheet for the songs I've written. The goal is to be done by October of 2022. Much of the recording work has already been done, but some have not. I've been about 7 already for the album. I need to finish 5 more for a 12-song album. I will have to check your show out. I did a search for a free lyric template, and this is how I found you. But I can always use tips on how to make music better. Thanks, Jeff M. Thanks for writing in, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. When the record is done, let us know. Perhaps you could be a guest on Song Talk Radio.
And we got a submission on the Song Talk Challenge from Lynn M. It says, hello, Neil, Phil, and Michael. First, thank you very much for putting in the work on the pod. I discovered it about a year ago and have caught up on all past episodes, which is frightening because there's a lot of them.
Oh, and my God, that's 6 years of episodes. Someone's retired.
And now never miss a new one. The songwriting process ideas from both yourselves and your guests have been very relevant and actionable for me on my journey to self-produce some of my songs. Please find attached my entry for this year's challenge. And then she goes on to talk about her process. And we will sort of read that more when we're doing our show on the challenge. So
now, this Song Talk Challenge, if only our listeners knew more about it. Neil, could you help them out?
I couldn't help them out, for sure. I mean, viewers, if you're on YouTube, then you're a viewer. You can watch all our
episodes. That's true.
That's true.
Well, so, listeners, viewers, or whatever, whichever way we want to slice it. So the Song Talk Radio Songwriting Challenge 2022, the third edition of our Songwriting Challenge. This year we decided to write a song based on a title, which is a tried and true method of jumpstarting a song. And we solicited our listeners / viewers for song title suggestions, and we whittled it down and we picked the title, Why Do You Cry? where the question mark is optional. So each of us, myself, Mike, and Phil, are going to write a song called Why Do You Cry? And we're going to share our selections hopefully sometime this month. and afterwards, like Phil was mentioning, that we got that one selection in from Lynn, who's already written a version of their song. And we've gotten a few others from other listeners as well already. And presumably after we showcase our songs, we'll get a whole slew of other ones. And we'll do an episode or two featuring your songs, the listener songs, on the podcast, and talk about how you came across or dealt with the title Why Do You Cry. So if you're going to send us something, you can send us an MP3 recording of your song, a lyric and chord sheet, and a little paragraph about where you hail from, a little bio about you as a songwriter, and a little paragraph about your songwriting process behind the song.
Yeah, just so we know something about you and something about what you went through, how you dealt with the challenge, what you learned, what was the challenge. That would be great. So we look forward to hearing from all of you, and we've been getting a few in, and it's been very exciting.
And I guess with previous years' challenges, we've always kind of put down the rules as such, right? They were always very rule heavy. Minor chord progression, happy lyrics. Was it a minor chord progression? And last year, chord progression all the same. Did you use a different chord progression in the bridge? Did you hold on a chord? All these things to break the rules. This year, I don't feel like there's much, unless you change the title, which I don't think anyone's going to do.
Cry, why do you?
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I mean, the challenge is the point. The point is the restrictions, because you're used to writing in a certain way, most people are. So the point of a song talk challenge is to limit your options and see how well you still work with that. And you're right, Neil, this year it's not much of a limitation. Just take this title. Mm-hmm. And make a damn song out of it.
Title. But in particular, if you've never written from a title before, this is a great way to start doing that and see what kind of results it yields. I mean, I used to never do that. Now that's pretty much all I do for my songs is I start with a title, and that's to be a really great way to start a song.
I've never done that before, so.
Well, it was a first for you.
Yeah, lyrics come last for Phil, so this is going to be a big challenge. Listen, like, I don't usually struggle with lyrics, but this has also been a challenge for me. So let's see how you all do with it. We want to hear your songs.
Yeah.
And that is that. But now we move on to the main event for tonight's show, our guest tonight. And I'm very excited. We got a fantastic guest tonight. Our guest is a 2-time Maple Blues Award songwriting recipient, an Edmonton Music Award, and Alberta Centennial Award recipient, and has sold nearly 30,000 albums off the stage in her under-the-radar yet critically acclaimed international career. Anne Vreen's sound is simultaneously reminiscent of the vintage rootsy soul style of Stax Records and Muscle Shoals recordings, which I love, but with contemporary appeal and politically poignant lyrics. In fact, the subject matter of AV's new album, Everybody Matters, is informed by the Macaulay neighborhood in Edmonton, Alberta, from whence she hails, and where there is a high concentration of people suffering from extreme forms of trauma and abuse, often resulting in addiction, mental illness, stigmatization, neglect, and further abuse. AV's own self-examination in response to this is the subject matter of the full-length album, in which she delves into the historical, cultural, and colonial reasons behind the great deal of this suffering, and which has led AV down a path of her own self-discovery as much as it was her neighbors and their own biographical stories. And here is a little sample of the first single off her album, the title track, Everybody Matters.
Everybody matters, no matter who you are. Some die starvation, some get life support. Hey, everybody matters, so some a little more. 58 die here, 10,000 where it's full. Some make the headlines, others just the final door. Hey, Everybody matters to some a little more. So you might see things for always you won't.
A big Song Talk Radio welcome to the amazing Anvreen. How are you? Welcome to our show. We have no audio from you.
I thought I was still ready.
There we go.
There we go.
It's a great voice, and we can't hear it. There we go.
No one ever said I was the best engineer. I'm a songwriter, but engineering is not my...
strong suit.
I hire other people for a reason. Let's just say that.
Fair enough.
Pretty wise.
That's great. So a great song and really interesting that you wrote so specifically this album about your neighborhood. You've done really well internationally. I'm kind of curious, what do you get from Edmonton? Why are you still there? Why aren't you living in a penthouse in New York or something?
Well, the immediate obvious answer would be that I could never afford it. And the second reason is that I could never afford it. Yeah. Like this is a very affordable neighborhood but because it's very, one that isn't for everyone. It's pretty, if you're not a tolerant person, this is not a neighborhood for you. And it's, you know, there's a lot, the opioid crisis has hit this neighborhood really hard. And during the pandemic, that just became worse. And so there's a lot of disturbing things to be seeing all the time. And it's really not very safe for kids, although there's a lot of kids in this neighborhood, that kind of thing. But your question was, what was your question? Oh, about the record and why I wrote about it. Well, I wrote about it because it's a pretty dramatic neighborhood. It's not your average Canadian neighborhood where you have a couple box stores and, you know, suburban streets or whatever. You know, it's not like that at all. And so for better or for worse, it's a very diverse neighborhood, and it's got there's no box stores and no chain anything. It's all small independent businesses bordering between Chinatown and Little Italy. And there's a lot of recent immigrants and recent refugees that have moved here, as well as just a whole lot of just the politics and the economics of the city have made it so that the people that struggle day to day with social and economic issues the most are sort of funneled here with the kind of resources that there are for them here. So there is an endless amount of things to write about in this neighborhood at any given moment of any hour of any day.
How did you wind up there?
Well, about 14 years ago this month, actually, my ex-partner and I, my partner at the time, thought that this neighborhood couldn't get any worse. So the theory that it would get better. And it didn't. So my house value did not. In fact, it kind of dipped down past below what I paid for it in recent years. So even though it is so near downtown, if you looked out my attic window right over there, like you can see the skyscrapers of downtown, they're like a kilometer away only. Mm-hmm. So in most cities, that would mean that you lived, you know, it's very central and it's very, it's near. You can walk in everywhere to what you need and everything. But because of the sort of extreme social needs and the sort of drug and gang related violence that is here, it's just still not a very desirable place for people to live. But so I kind of got stuck here. So, which is why, like, if I could not sell my house here and move to a penthouse in New York or a penthouse anywhere.
What I'm actually curious about, AV, is that it sounds like you're in the lived experience, as people like to say, right? And there you draw your inspiration from and your narratives and everything like that. But with the style of music that you're doing, I'll admit I'm not all that familiar with the Muscle Shoals and that kind of tradition of music, although I know a little bit of it, but. Is there a strong kind of protest song tradition there, or is that something that you've kind of intersected in a newer way?
Well, I'm not sure if it's in the neighborhood per se, although because of the really absolutely international diverse backgrounds of people in the neighborhood, it'd be impossible to really say if there's a sand of the neighborhood. There isn't. But I would say that, like, I'm a huge appreciator of singer songwriters from the soul tradition. And there's always been politics built into people like Curtis Mayfield and Aretha and Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye and Nina Simone. Like, you could, there's just, so like, you could just go on and on with the list. And because people were oppressed and it was part of their reality, you write what you know, right? Like, I'm pretty sure you've covered that on your show, that you have more authority and more insight to write things that you know about than if you don't. So here I just sort of realized that there was, it was not a hard connection to make genre wise with the topic. Mm-hmm. And also just sort of with hip hop too, and the different kinds of genres that are, you know, interconnected to soul and R&B, there's sort of a ghetto vibe to it, in the sense that, where, you know, you were talking right before we got on the air about accidentally recording someone with a microphone incorrectly, but the lo-fi sound is kind of, you know, my motto is rock what you got, because, you know, in this neighborhood and just in general, like in most places in the world, actually, you know, people don't have endless amount of resources for the most expensive gear and the most expensive studios or even actual instruments. So hip hop, for example, is this genre that sprouted from people not having musically instruments, but wanting to musically express themselves. So they found already existing music and wrapped over top of it and, you know, used technology in an innovative way to make a new genre, which to date is the most influential genre on the planet. So that's kind of like something that I wanted to bring into the sound of this album, to sort of, without connecting the dots really overly obviously, sort of connect those things musically to those things that are more abstract, I guess, ideas.
What is your musical journey? Where did you start out? Have you always been a fan of soul music and Stax and Muscle Shoals, that kind of production and approach to songwriting and performing?
I didn't grow up with it, but I did grow up listening to some old gospel albums. Because my mom picked up a couple of vinyl records when she lived briefly in Chicago, when she was going to university there, and she was from an immigrant family, so she moved to the poorest neighborhoods of Chicago, which happened to be, especially at that time, African American neighborhoods, and it was during the race riots and in the civil rights movement in the late 60s. And so it was an interesting place to be as a minority for her. but also picking up some of the albums, because she's a very religious person, to come from a really religious background. So she was like, I gotta go to church on Sunday. So she just went to the nearest church in a neat, naive way, which happened to be these African American Baptist gospel churches where the music is fantastic and really powerful. And so those records went, like, growing up in Edmonton, in a blue collar, mostly like Ukrainian neighborhood, certainly I wasn't exposed to Baptist Southern music directly, but through those albums, it was kind of like this world of where people were really, really putting it in on the line when they sang and when they, you know, worshiped, and in this way that I just found really electrifying. And really now I understand soul to be kind of the commercialized, secularized version of gospel music. Mm-hmm. And so the same singers that would sing every Sunday at church would, you know, many of them got recording contracts and are the soul singers that we know today, right? Right up the line, like from Aretha and Ray, all the way up to Beyonce and D'Angelo and now, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's just a very big part of the influence of North American music is that whole evolution of R&B music.
Mm-hmm. So what is your songwriting process? Has it changed much over the years? Or do you have the same approach from song to song? Or?
Well, yeah, I was listening to your introduction, telling listeners about your podcast, and I was thinking about that and your title. I like the idea of having different assignments kind of for people, because I try to do that myself so that I don't, you know, write the same song over and over again, which, you know, I'm sure you're all kind of like, we all, like you were saying, have sort of this rut that we fall into. That's our just most comfortable way of doing a thing. That's the way our brain approaches songwriting. And while that's fine and great, you know, eventually you want to bring some new blood into the equation, whether you co-write or whether you try an assignment like that. And so when I was in university, I took a couple of creative writing courses because I was majoring in English at the time. And I had one professor who basically did that, what you guys are doing, but in poetry writing. So every week we would have two assignments, one just to write whatever we wanted, no parameters or rules, just write a poem. And then the other assignment would be changing week to week, and it would be write things that only have this many syllables, or write, you must include these words in your poem at some point, or, you know, you like just you have to follow this particular form, or every week it was a different thing like that. And those to me got the best creativity out of me, because I had to work around, I couldn't just, if I needed to use a word that had too many syllables, well, then I couldn't. I'd have to find a synonym for it, you know? And it's much like that in songwriting, where if you have rules, like I'm working on a remix of one of my songs from the album right now, and it's more for pop radio than the album is. And so, you know, that you're forcing parameters on your arranging and writing, because pop radio is very, first of all, the song has to be short, and second of all, it has to get to the chorus really quickly, and, you know, can't have too many chords or be too busy, because that's, pop is a very minimalistic these days. And so, you know, you can't just do whatever you want. You know, you can't just put in an orchestra and strings and backup singers and horns. You know, it's not Tower Power these days, you know? And so you have to kind of, I think you get creative when you have restrictions, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good point that you're sort of self-imposing them, right? Because, you know, we're talking about a songwriting challenge where we are delivering the rules, to the people to say, do it this way. But there's nothing to stop anybody out there from saying, I'm going to come up with some rules myself and apply.
Exactly.
And yeah. You're absolutely right that as soon as you have those limitations, that gives you more creativity in an ironic way, as opposed to just facing a blank page is like the scariest thing. You know, you don't know.
Yeah, that's option anxiety is what that is.
Yeah, well, exactly. Option anxiety. That's a good way to put it. Where you can't do anything. So what do you do?
Yeah.
Do you start off with lyrics or an idea?
Well, that's the thing. I kind of try to change it up. So sometimes I do. I have, you know, on my notes on my phone, I kind of, if I think of a phrase or I kind of like to work from the micro out. So I'm kind of the opposite of your thing of having the title first, although that would be a cool, you know, opposite variation to try, where I kind of sometimes have a little image or a little play on words that I think is cool. And I have no idea where that will take me, what the song will be about. I just know that that's a cool thing, or I think it is. And then I have a little folder of like lyrical ideas on my phone of that. And then also on my phone, on my voice memos, I have musical ideas. If I think of a melody, or a riff or something, chord progression, then I'll record it really quickly and just write a little title on it so that I don't have voice number 29, voice number, you know, because I've fallen into that exact problem. Like, I kept writing new song every time.
Before you know it, they're old.
Yeah, and also, like, 300 new songs with the same title, new song,
yeah,
don't make you find the one you're looking for easily. So there's a little tip.
Yeah. Be a bit more specific with your labeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And new is relative. That's right. Yeah.
And yeah, if
media management is key.
If you ever start with music, are you a piano player, a guitar player?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. I wish to play guitar for logistical reasons, but no, I play a big old piano.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, so there's nothing wrong with it, but when you tour with it, you rapidly feel like there's something very wrong with it.
Fair enough.
Not as easy. Yeah, for this album, did you have in mind that it was all going to be about this neighborhood, this topic, or did that come together as you were putting the songs together?
Because it kind of came together. I mean, maybe I'm just a very unself-aware person, but usually I don't really know what's on my mind until I write. In a way, like, I don't know. It's a way of kind of like, I try really hard to not self-edit and filter anything when I'm initially writing and just kind of let it come out how it comes out. And then later I might be, none of those ideas were good. Oh, well, or there's something there, but this is terrible, this part, or, you know, but not edit as initially. I just kind of let things flow out in as just sort of subconscious, let your subconscious take over sort of thing. And I did notice, I mean, this album is not the necessarily last songs I wrote. It's just the songs I thought of, the songs I'd written that belong together. And I could see them kind of coming from my these issues being in my mind of social justice sort of issues that relate globally, but the sort of micro things that I saw daily here made me think of those, of the world differently and more often than probably if I lived in any other neighborhood. And so I kind of decided that, the writing that I was doing sort of revealed to me that, oh, this is on your mind. Like, this affects you, like seeing people shoot up, you know, seeing a woman walking down the street without shoes on, sobbing. Like, those aren't things that that don't affect you. Like, they just do, like, you can't help it, you know? And so then you wonder, like, why is that? You know, it just takes your mind in a different place. And so after a while, that's the collection that was in front of me, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, specifically, Everybody Matters, how did that come about?
That song?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So actually this project came out of the fact that in 2019, I was doing a really long tour in Europe and I had these more produced sort of pop R&B albums that I was touring. But because of my limited indie budget, I only had three musicians with me and I kind of decided to be a little bit weird about the instrumentation and have the three of us be myself on piano and Rhodes or keys, and then a Hammond organ player and a backup singer. So we didn't have bass or drums, like the keyboard players covered the bass. And then we had harmonies and we implied rhythm as much as we could by trying to play it rhythmically. And it went over really well, in part because we were playing in really echoey places a lot in Europe, lots of old churches and cellars and things that are designed for pre-microphone, pre-PA system days, you know? And so drums kind of end up being a disaster half the time in those small kind of echoey places. And people, you know, really loved the harmonies a lot. And so at the merchandise table, I would have all these people asking me, do you have anything that sounds exactly like the concert, like we just heard with that instrumentation? And then I would have to say no or lie. So I said no. And so I basically realized, like, in the middle of that tour, of course, it wasn't that far-fetched to be like, maybe I should make an album like that. So that was this project. And then it really was meant to be released in the spring of 2020 on a tour in Europe. But then, of course, the pandemic changed all that. So this has really kind of been a delayed release of that album. But it really was kind of like what you're talking about before, where I put parameters on myself to only use that instrumentation. And well, except drums. I had some I decided to add programmed drums to kind of bring it in a little bit more to the modern R&B world. But that was it. I really tried to make rules for myself in that sense and try to get creative within it. So the Everybody Matters song, I wanted to see if I could make it's really just a blues, and the bridge is different chordally, but the rest is a blues, and just see if I could write a sort of a modern blues song about the times that I felt related to the whole kind of the issues of the day, in the sense of our society still having a long way to go to come with human rights and equality being consistent and equal for all the people on the planet.
None.
Yeah, and that's a long answer.
Yeah, no, and it sounds great. What was the production process like? How was it recorded?
Well, so a very non-straightforward way. Like, it sounds live off the floor, but it actually wasn't. The Hammond organ player that I toured with on that tour, I know from here, and he actually produced my very first album with me a long time ago. But he had recently moved to LA. So including his entire studio, mostly of keyboards, because he's a really great keyboard player. So he took a semi truck and drove it with all his, including a grand piano, to LA.
Wow.
And it was a feat that didn't go that well. And he has a lot of stories about it, but he eventually did. So he recorded. So I did a demo. I found a producer in Toronto named Chris Burkett, who does a lot of acoustic, a really great recording engineer as well as producer. And he does a lot of acoustic stuff. He's really good at live off the floor, vintage instrument recording, and a really great guy. So I got connected to him through a mutual friend. And then I demoed songs in his, just at his apartment, in his home studio, and then sent them off to the Hammond organ player who would do takes on the Hammond organ with his Leslie speaker set up and everything like that. And then he'd sort of send lo-fi resolution versions of that to us to check out. And we would make him do a couple more passes. And that was how we did that. And then for the vintage keyboards, other than piano that I played, we went to Revolution Recorders in Toronto to do. And then the acoustic piano, we went into a acoustic piano shop in Mississauga after hours. And that where there were like all the Ferraris of pianos, basically. And played, I got to play like the biggest one with extra grand piano. And Chris engineered it on the spot. And we did it at night, so there would be less traffic and no customers, obviously. And then the vocals I did back at Chris's apartment. And then the pandemic happened, and I did the drums back here in Edmonton with a couple of friends, one who did the programming and one who did acoustic drums. So it was the opposite of a live off the floor recording.
Ah, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, but that's how.
We should... That's great. We should take a listen to it. Any questions more, guys, before we get into it?
I want to make a point. I love this track for so many reasons, but just something to listen for is like the great vocalists throughout time. I figured this out about 10 years ago, and I wish I'd realized it before. All the magic is at the ends of the words, the way they handle the ends of the words. Well, pay attention to how the ends of the words are handled through the whole song, and it's just, it's a masterpiece in that way. Just listen to it.
I never thought about that before, so I will pay attention also.
Exactly. No, don't right. Go anywhere. Take a listen.
All right, here all right. We go.
It's very good. You like it.
All right. Well, I'm learning.
Say everybody matters, no matter who you are. Some die of starvation, some get life support. Yeah, everybody matters, so some a little more. 58 die here, 10,000 square is full. Some make the headlines, others just the final door. Everybody matters to some a little more. So you might see things for always it won't work here. Don't like slavery, cause I'll call that over there. Everybody matters to some a little more, just to be clear. You gotta get ahead. You can feel it to your core. See it everywhere you look now. At the banks and the billboards. Till you can barely make it. Just some a little more. So you wanna be righteous. Follow the good Lord. You got peace for all. Achieved by the soul. Oh yeah, everybody matters. Just some a little more. Yeah, everybody matters to some a little more. Ooh. Oh, everybody matters in the eyes of the Lord. Oh, everybody matters to some a little, some a little, some a little. Everybody matters. Oh, some a little more. Everybody matters. Oh, some a little more. Everybody matters.
Excellent. Fantastic.
Cool.
Yeah. Neil, what do you think?
Oh, I love this track. It's so, it's got so much meat on the bone. You know, it's got, the groove is simple, but it totally has a great energy to it. The hooks are fantastic. The central conceit of everybody matters, just some a little more. Like, that's such a great way to put it, and it's such a great turn of phrase, and again, it's so simple, but it totally gets the message across. Some of the lyrics are beautifully crafted. You know, 58 die here, 10,000s where it's poor. Like, that's extraordinarily a powerful statement. I love the breakdown verse. You want to be righteous, follow the good Lord. Got peace for our own, achieved by the sword. I think that's probably the best lyric in the whole thing. Because you're right, you're talking about, you know, the notion that we have in Canada, we have a stable country compared to a lot of other places, but how was the stability achieved? And there's a lot of trauma there, and there's a lot of colonialism and a lot of, you know, bad stuff that led us to this. So it's a good balanced thing. So I really like it that, you know, it's got a great energy and funky and dancey, and yet there's some really good substance to it, because often when a song is, you know, that funky and dancey, it's just about dancing, or it's about something light or whatever.
I know what you mean, and like those kind of deep, dark, very, very sort of, you know, serious topics, I think, like, you know, probably you've talked a lot in, I'm assuming, about contrast at some point in your songwriting thing, but whether it's music or with lyrics, like, I think you can sometimes have contrast, like you were talking, like a sad song with happy music or vice versa, and I sort of think, like, too much sad plus sad is just too sad. Like, you know, how to bum people out. Like, you know, and that's what I sort of love about the R&B genre, is that there's a lot of political music in R&B, and there always has been, but it always, you can always dance to it, and you can, it's always groovy, or it's always sexy, and it's, you know, there's, you know, you can talk about, like, Marvin Gaye, what's going on, or Curtis Mayfield Superfly or, you know, about neighborhood much like my own, without, and still, even if you didn't know English, you'd be like, that's a damn good song, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you can play with is not just contrast within your lyrics, within your music, although that's important too, but in a bigger way, just in lyrics and music, you know? Mm-hmm. And, that's a fun thing to play with, I think, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Phil, what'd you think?
It's so funny because, you know, I wrote in my notes when I heard it, the first couple of bars, I went, live band, you know, with lots of exclamation marks. So I'm just going like, and that's what's so remarkable is that, like, doing that the way you did it is very tough to make it sound organic,
right,
but not sloppy. I mean, there's people who do that because they don't know how to use their equipment, or they're just learning.
Right.
But there's other people who will take that stuff and will just time correct it and put it into a grid, and it just kills it. Like, this sounds like it's a bunch of people just sitting in a room with microphones. I mean, that's what it sounds like. And interestingly enough, Chris was on our show way back when we first started.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They know him. That's awesome. Yeah.
So it was, like, he did a great job. And the way that she, you know, like, he had the Hammond instead of, like, what would be, like, maybe a horn line or a guitar line, you have this Hammond line. And you don't really hear a lot of Hammond organ used that way anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. It's sort of fallen out of fashion, but it's really great. And I love the bridge. The opening of the bridge was interesting, but the end, the last two chords, I don't know if you remember what those chords are, but those are, it's wonderful. Can you talk a bit about the structure, like chordal structure of the song?
Well, sure. Like, actually, the bridge I wrote on the spot because Chris was like, you know, this song kind of needs a bridge. Mm. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, we're using some very, like, 1, 4, and 5 chords. The whole song is blues. Like, it really is an 8-bar, I think, 8-bar blues. That's it. Like, that's the whole song otherwise. And so I thought that maybe putting a bridge, again, contrast, putting a bridge that was really, had a lot of chords and they were outside of the key, some of them, that would be kind of a sonic little break, you know, and also like having the time feel drop out there to more just whole notes and was sort of a way to get away from the groove for a second and kind of make people pay attention to that part, you know, and have a little break, a sonic break. So I was on a key, like he had a keyboard in his studio and I just thought I would just go to another key for a second. And then I was like, oh, but I have to get back. So I literally, that was the thing that dropped, like it was that. And he's like, oh, wow, that's okay. Yeah. Great.
Do you remember what the two keys are?
Well, okay. The song is in D. So I go D major, but then I went up to like this, the downbeat of that first top chord of the bridge is F. So F major, like not F sharp. So it's the...
Is it the 3?
Yeah, it's the 3, but it's the flat 3, right? So,
flat 3 of the D major. Okay.
Of the chord, of the key that I was in. And then, so I kind of just like a whole other key, like an unrelated key to D. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really interesting how you come back, because when you make a key change like that, it you're right, it can be difficult.
Yeah, then you're
back.
Like, oh, where's the...
What you did was really clever, because there's literally a moment of silence, and then, so you got to get ahead is a cappella. So you're just floating a melody before you go back into the D major, which is really, really clever. Like, you did, so it doesn't feel jarring at all.
Right. Yeah. And then I somehow, I guess there are a lot of key, like chords and keys that kind of keep changing your ear as to what is the tonic in that little section. But then coming out of it, I'm coming out on the, I'm ending on the 5, or no, I'm ending on really the 7, the flat 7, C, a C chord, but that could be a substitute for a 5. Right, like a 7. So then it kind of just feels like a 5 chord, and so then you're back in D. I don't know. I think one of the advantages of being a piano player when it comes to theory and songwriting is that you can, it's laid out in a row, like in a very, very, like, lowest note is over here and the highest is there. And everything is very, very linear. Like, it couldn't be laid out more simply. And so you can see, like, I don't know, I think just, I don't know, maybe it's because I took music theory twice in my life. And the first time I found it really hard. And the second time it was like a light bulb lit up over my head, so that I kind of like, I've spent a lot of time writing bridges and thinking about how they would get back. Like, how do you get back to the original?
Which is really fun. It's a fun thing to do, actually.
It is. It's like a puzzle. Mm-hmm. It's a puzzle.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
You give yourself like so many steps. It's like a chess game where you have to think backwards from your goal, mm-hmm. and you have only so many moves, and you have to do it within this many bars. And you're like, well, my bridge can't be longer than my song. So. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Again, you put limitations on yourself, yeah. and sometimes you write a whole other song. Like, there's times that people have, I've realized that, oh, my bridge is another song. You know, like sometimes I think when you're first writing, you overwrite, and the more that you write songs, the more you realize that you might have written three songs when you meant to write one song. Hmm. You know, and like sometimes I work with other songwriters and they bring songs to me and they ask me to evaluate them. And that's usually when, and it's a lot of times where I'm like, I think you have three songs here, and they don't really connect with each other. You just have three songs and you need to finish them each, you know? Mm-hmm. And maybe your bridge is just doesn't fit in this song because it's not flowing in or out of the rest, but it's cool, you know?
It deserves to be its own thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's an important thing to be able to recognize that and be able to see.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, the way that I've sort of think about songs in my head is that they're kind of like a spider web where the middle is the chorus. And like this, it's kind of like where you see maps of Rome or Paris, where all roads are London, all the roads, if you go zoom out far enough, you realize, oh, it's like a spider web. Like, all the merchants were taking their wagons to go trade their goods, and the farmers, you know, at this big city. And in a way that you want to do that with your song, so that all of the things that you're doing the whole song lead to the chorus for some reason or another. Right. And if they don't, then you have to ask yourself, like, what is it doing there?
Yeah. And that's the interesting thing about this song too, is there's no chorus. And you were talking.
Well, there's a tagline. It's kind of more like a blues, right? Like,
there is stuff in there that serves the purpose of a chorus.
Yeah.
Right, with the repetition.
But it's different. It's not written like a pop song because it's a blues. Like, that's the thing about the challenge of writing blues. Like, people think they can write blues until they try to write a blues because, you know, you have your first line and then it repeats. And then you have your third line, which is different. And then your fourth line is kind of this clever summary of the things you were saying. Mm. And so that's the format, which is different than what I just said about pop songwriting, where it's always coming to the middle of like first, chorus, bridge, chorus, 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 like lots of chorus, you know? Mm. And so blues are a little different, where it's kind of like, what's your tagline? Like, what's that line that kind of explains the whole song? That's kind of clever. Mm-hmm. And, you don't have a lot of words in blues because so much is repeated. You know, your tagline's mm-hmm. repeated, and then per verse, you're repeating your first and second line. So you don't have, like, the lyric is you're not like writing a novel's worth of lyrics. So you have very few. So you got to really tell a story in a short amount of words.
I wouldn't qualify Everybody Matters as, it's not a lot of lyric, but it's also not a minimal lyric. It's just the right amount, I think, but like, it's certainly not minimalist in terms of lyrics.
Yeah. But I mean, there are far more minimalist, that's for sure. But I guess what I mean is that, you know, compared to like hip hop or something where you can get caught in or, you know, it's also short. Like, I really tried to make sure all these songs were pretty short on the record. Mm-hmm. You know, even because it's even got a solo in it, so that kind of takes up some time.
Yeah. So what is a short song? I mean, that's something I've been playing around with, like working on songs and going, geez, is this too long? Or,
well, I mean, it's relative, right? There, people would argue Stairway to Heaven, like, I mean, that's not a short song, but people love it. It has a lot of sections, right? It's kind of almost like a classical music piece with all these like
so sweet
parts, you know? Yeah. But you know, like that Old Town Road song that was a hit a couple of years ago is not even 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Biggest hit of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, pop is the pop songs are getting shorter and shorter. Like I tried to like this song's 3 minutes on the dot, I think. Mm-hmm. And some of the songs that are on the record are a little bit shorter, and some of them are like there's a ballad that's 4 or 5, like really long. Honestly, like I think that depending on the genre, you know, and depending how many souls you have, but if you're trying to stay in a kind of a pop format, you can always expand when you play live. You know, you have way more solos, have it way longer, vamp the beginning and talk to the crowd for 5 minutes, like whatever you want to do. But when you have sort of I try to have like the song that's on the recording be kind of like the really concise Cole's notes of it. And that's it. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I never did when I started out. Yeah. My songs are getting shorter as the more I write them.
If you go back to like early Beatles or CCR songs, they pack a ton of content into under 3 minutes. Verse, chorus, yeah. Verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, all under 3 minutes. It's kind
yeah,
of
yeah. They had to because that was how the format, right? Like yeah. Of you know, so you had to write within again those confines and those rules.
Yeah.
So you realize, like, if I'm not getting to the chorus by 30 seconds in, something's wrong. My intro's too long, or my verse is too long, or something, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Processing stuff. What do you think there, Michael?
Well, a couple of things. Until you talked about how it was put together, it sounded so big, and then listening to it again, I realized, yeah, there's not that many instruments in it at all. And also just about the lyrics, that they are very economical to get across a pretty weighty subject. So, you know, that can't be easy to do.
Yeah, I think part of songwriting is what you like is taking things out. You know, like obviously you need to create a thing that was not there before, but you also have to like always ask yourself, like, what is the point? Does this serve? Like, really, what is the point I'm trying to make in this song? And if this doesn't serve it, it has to go. You know, like it. You have to kind of be really, I think, have it in your mind when you're in the editing process, not in the writing process. Like I said, when you're just sort of getting out ideas and letting yourself just be creative. But once you're deciding to edit, then I think it's like you really have to say, does this road lead to Rome in the sense of like, is it helping my point? Because if it's kind of just there as like, this is such a cool line though, but yes, it is, but maybe that's for another song, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think.
Did this song go through a lot of editing?
The lyrics did a little bit because I had way too many. Like, you know, I wrote a lot of verses, and then it was this sort of exactly that where I had to kind of, it sounds terrible, but that term, you know, kill your babies, which is like horrible. But, you know, you have all these things that you feel precious about because you're proud of them. They didn't fit in there, you know, and you have to kind of say, well, what are the best ones? Or, you know, you have only... You might have really have a strong first verse and you have a first last verse and you're like, well, the second verse has to say this because I can't leave a gap in the explanation or the story either. So then there's only certain lines that are going to be second verse material. So process of elimination. Like, again, like it's like a puzzle, like we were saying before, where eventually it becomes a little bit obvious. Like you start crossing things out and then you're left with like, oh, it has to be that. You know,
absolutely.
Well, it ended up at a great place. So,
well, I hope so. You know, like I said, it was an experiment. So, again, like I said, it was an experiment to try to write a blues tune that could be modern, hopefully relevant, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it certainly does. Well, thank you for being a guest on the show. It's great of you to come by.
Oh man, I love talking about this stuff. So, you know, I'm still always on the journey learning too. So I might check out your podcast and try some of your assignments.
Yeah.
Oh, please do.
Yeah. Please contribute. So it'd be great.
Oh, yeah. I love that stuff.
It'd be great to have a blues song called Why Do You Cry?
Well, that's one genre.
That's way down that alley, right? Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you never know. Like, you can make your, like, it's amazing what you can come up with when, like, you have those, like you said, parameters. And honestly, like, I think the best artists, like, I remember hearing, I don't know if this is true, that B.B. King, you know, didn't have a guitar because he was so poor. So he, you know, just got a board, I guess, that he's from his veranda, and he just put some fishing wire across it, and he had one note. So he had developed a sort of single note style that he's famous for to this day of playing. He's one of the most, you know, influential blues or any kind of guitar player in the world who didn't have a guitar. You know, and then there's all these people that have, like, you know, very expensive guitars hanging in their wall and they can barely play them, you know. And so I kind of equate that to, like, you know, the hip hop whole culture too, where you just with the rock with you what you got thing, where you know, or Bob Dylan, who was very limited in his vocal range, for example. So he wrote, you know, limited melodies that he could sing, but they were very catchy. And, like, your limitations can actually be what defines you in a good way. It doesn't have to be a bad thing.
No, very helpful. Well, thank you. I can hear the banjolets all the time we have tonight.
Okay. I was wondering where that was.
It's great to have you. So we'll have to have you back on again. There's so much more to talk about.
This was fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. And so, everyone at home, please send us your impressions on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to @SongTalkRadio about how you felt about the show. Send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. And please be sure to check out all our YouTube channels for live performance videos and us in little boxes and full episodes, and stop by the site at songtalk.ca. And subscribe to Song Talk Radio Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher.com, Spotify, or Podcast Addict. And don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca. You can find all the links to products, books, and web services we mentioned on the show at our resources page at songtalk.ca. And please feel free to join us for our next Song Talk meetup next month. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend. So you can drop by songtalk.ca for the link to the meetup as well. And if you need more of our guests, what's the best social media to find you at, Anne?
Well, all of mine are at Anne Vreen, which is AnnVreend.com. Like French.
Excellent.
Yeah. Or perfect. Just A, and you can just call me AV. For short.
That's easier. And Neil, where can we get more of you, Neil?
NeilMody.com.
Excellent. And Phil, are you back up? Where are you?
I am. PhilEmery.ca.
Perfect. And you can find me on Instagram at CrowdFit420. That is all we have tonight. Please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out how you might be a guest, and keep on writing. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Keep on writing.
Great. Thanks again, guys.